On Dasher, on Dancer, on Comet, on Vixen, on Ring, on The Bell, on Sucka. This is Movie Fighters. My name's Matt Wilson. Chris Sims is also here.
Hello.
We watch movies and beat them up.
Seems like a mean thing to do at this time of year, Matt.
Well, we watch movies and spread the joy of the season to them.
There we go.
And we're watching a gift for ourselves this time.
Yes, indeed.
There was a magical day a few months ago in which the online streaming video company called Flicks of the Net announced that there was going to be a film called The Christmas Chronicles.
Uh-huh.
In which Mr. Kurt Russell would be playing Santa Claus.
Yeah, which is all I've ever wanted.
And at that very moment, we determined that there was no choice but to watch this movie for Movie Fighters.
Yeah. Now, there is a new My Little Pony Christmas special this year, but it is MLP Classic, not Equestria Girls, and therefore we are not bound by the terms of our curse to watch that one.
Yeah, we don't watch anything with ponies in it. We only watch things with pony girls.
I wish you wouldn't.
But what we do watch unassailably is movies where Kurt Russell plays Santa Claus. So we are going to be watching Christmas Chronicles for Movie Fighters for our Christmas spectacular episode this time. And if you have Netflix, you can watch it with us because it's on there. It's really the only place you can watch it, in fact.
Yeah, it's a Netflix original.
Now, was this one of the Netflix movies that got a theatrical release?
I mean, I don't know. Do Netflix movies get a theatrical release?
Sometimes. I know The Ballad of Buster Scruggs was briefly released into some theaters.
Okay.
Based on the Wikipedia page, there's nothing about a theatrical release, though.
Okay. I will say this. I've watched a lot of Netflix original movies, and not to disparage Netflix, but I've watched a lot of Christmas ones, Matt, as you know. I've seen plenty of Christmas Princes, Christmas Wedding Planners, Magic Advent Calendars. I've seen them all. This one looks like a movie in a way that those do not.
Well, I feel like Netflix original movies are becoming more movie-like because they're getting filmmakers to make them.
Yeah. Well, I feel like some of them are, right? Like, you know, obviously Glow is prestige television.
Sure.
Christmas Chronicles is made by actual movie makers. But
well,
So
the director of Christmas Chronicles is Clay Cadis, who has only directed one other feature. Mm-hmm. And that was the Angry Birds movie.
Yep.
He has been an animator on numerous other films, though. Like, his entire career up to this has been in animated movies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, interesting. Kind of like a Brad Bird scenario. Like, Brad Bird did almost exclusively animation, and then suddenly he was doing a Mission Impossible.
Did Brad Bird do a Mission Impossible?
Yeah. Not the latest one, but the one before that.
Was that Ghost Protocol?
Ghost Protocol, yeah. That was Brad Bird.
I had no idea that was Brad Bird.
Yeah.
Like, from The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Wild.
So Clay Cadis is taking a real Brad Bird approach.
Real double B. Real Brad Bird.
But this movie was produced by Chris Columbus of Home Alone fame.
Yeah. And them, Home Alone.
And them Harry Potters.
Them Harry Potters. The very workmanlike Harry Potter films
uh-huh.
that he made. He's got some cred.
He does. And
he
so
made North.
North. That's right. Wait, wasn't
which
that
is
Rob
trash.
Reiner? I thought that was
been
Rob
Reiner. Is it?
I think it was Rob Reiner.
Let's see. Let's ask my good friend Dr. Wikipedia.
Okay.
North. Okay, well, there's a disambiguation page. Actually, it takes me straight to the direction, which is
of
weird.
Of course. I mean, you could look just type in North film.
All right, here we go. North 1994 film. No, it is directed by Rob Reiner. You were correct. I was sure that was a Columbus jam.
I am pretty good at the directors.
Wow, Matt, you know at least one thing about the movie North.
That's true. When we get into the movie, and I guess this is where I have to reveal that we've already watched it.
Yeah, I actually watched it on Thanksgiving. I watched it when it was released.
And I watched it today, the day we were recording this. I did think it felt like something in between a theatrical film and a TV movie.
Well, here's my take, and I think I know why you think that. If you're ready for my just sizzling hot take.
Hit me.
I think you feel that way because it looks like a movie. It sounds like a movie. It's got like the direction and script of like a theatrical Christmas film, except no one told them not to do anything.
Well, that's Netflix across the board.
Yeah. So about halfway through this movie, it just gets bonkers.
It really does. But also I'll talk about it when we get into the movie, but there's one thing that makes me think, even though it does get bonkers, it's a little budgety. But before we get into that, I do want to read the reception section of Wikipedia for this movie. On the review aggregator Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 70% based on 40 reviews, with a weighted average of 5.8 out of 10. 70% good, 5.8, kind of rough. The website's critical consensus reads, viewers seeking a fresh holiday viewing option, or those simply in the mood for Santa Kurt Russell, should find The Christmas Chronicles well worth a Yuletide stream.
Yeah, which is basically saying, yeah, it's free, ain't it?
It's free. Well, yeah, or you've already paid for it, at least. On Metacritic, the film has a weighted average of 52 out of 100 based on 10 critics, indicating mixed or average reviews. And it earned a massive 20 million streams in its first week on Netflix.
Yeah, because the people are hungry for a good new Christmas classic. Let me tell you.
I think you're right. Like, what is the last super rewatchable Christmas movie?
I like Arthur Christmas quite a bit, which is fairly recent. But I mean, it's, you know, it's good, but it's not White Christmas, you know?
I never hear anybody talk about it.
Arthur Christmas is highly underrated. If more people watched it, more people would love it.
It's also from that movie's also from 2011.
Yes, it's. I mean, look, it's been a minute.
The movie that gets played in theaters around Christmas as like special Christmas events. The most recent film is Elf.
Yep, that is true.
And that movie came out in 2003.
Yeah, that's Jon Favreau pre-Iron Man.
That's it's been
proven he can do it.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a drought.
Agreed,
like,
wholeheartedly.
Like, we've got a glut of Christmas movies.
Yeah,
but they're all in the Hallmark Lifetime mold.
Now, and look, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I like Christmas cheese as much as anybody.
Sure.
If we were not treating ourselves, we would absolutely straight up be doing Christmas Prince 1 and 2,
or,
which are delightfully bad.
Or The Princess Switch or something.
Princess Switch is not as good, but it does have two Vanessa Hudgenses, which is almost 200% more than any other film. Point being, the world needs a new Christmas classic.
We need a new Christmas classic. We really do. And it's not, you know, I feel like there have been attempts over the last 15 years.
What do you think the most recent shot at like a genuine Christmas classic was?
Oh boy.
Rise of the Guardians? I like that movie, but I mean, it didn't take off the way I think it should have.
But also, Rise of the Guardians isn't just a Christmas movie. It's an every holiday.
It's technically an Easter movie, but it's got a really good Santa Claus in it.
Sure, but it's an every holiday movie.
Yeah.
If you want to really get down to it.
I love that Santa, though, with the two swords and his eyes full of wonder. Oh, I love it, Matt. I love it so much.
Okay. I Googled classic Christmas movies just to see.
Mm-hmm.
And the magazine Town and Country lists 2006's The Holiday.
The Holiday is very good. The Holiday is very fun.
That might be the most recent movie they have on here.
Yeah, that's certainly the best Christmas rom-com that we've gotten in a while.
Okay, it has the 2009 Robert Zemeckis computer animated Christmas Carol. Get that shit out of here.
The one with Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
Yeah, no thanks.
The
guys.
One with the terrifying Robert Zemeckis animation?
Yeah, what are you doing? Get that out of here.
Yeah, the most recent movie on here is The Holiday.
Holiday is very good. But I mean, it's The Holiday is not like a movie the whole, like, kids aren't going to like The Holiday. What are you talking about? Kids don't want to see Kate Winslet date Jack Black.
Also, Christmas with the Cranks is on here.
That movie doesn't suck as bad as you probably think, but it's also, I mean, it's hey, Christmas Vacation is good. Why don't we make that? Why don't we just make that? Like, literally just make that.
Yeah, there aren't a lot. There aren't a lot. And to be TBQH, Christmas Chronicles maybe comes the closest in a long time.
We'll talk about it. I think Christmas Chronicles has the potential to full-on franchise.
We'll talk about it. But before we get into the details of the movie, Chris, we need to do the hottest segment in all of podcasting. That's right. It's time for Snack Situation.
Snack Situation! What the snack is on?
Now, Chris, we're playing a little fast and loose with the rules of the show. We've done that a few times recently, where we've actually watched the movie before we recorded the show. So we can either talk about the snack you're eating right now or the snack you ate while you watched the movie a month ago.
That would have been Thanksgiving dinner, which is very, very good.
Okay.
But the snack I'm rolling with right now, Matt, is, I mean, it's Christmas time, as you know. And you know Absolutely. What I eat at Christmas time.
Hit me.
Reese's Trees, baby.
Oh, some Reese's Trees.
Yeah, man. And it's peanut butter, so it's healthy. So you can, like, eat them and then not go to the gym for, like, 2 weeks, like protein. I've been doing.
You're getting your protein.
Yeah, exactly.
I strongly considered getting in the car and driving over to Cookout to get an eggnog milkshake.
Okay, what if we pause this recording and instead of watching the movie, we both go to Cookout and come back?
It's almost 10 already.
Yeah, Cookout's open till 2.
Sure, but if we go to Cookout and get milkshakes and come back, we won't be done with this until 1 a.m. So what I'm doing...
So you're a quitter.
I'm not a quitter. I just don't want... I'm settled. I'm wearing my pajama pants.
Look, I'm also wearing my pajama pants. Here's the thing about Cookout. It's got a drive-thru, bro.
I'm settled at home.
Okay.
So...
All right.
What I'm doing instead of... And I kind of want to save the Cookout eggnog milkshake for, like, a snack situation special taste test.
Mmm.
So what I'm doing instead is I'm hitting the archives because I still got a lot of these small Debras, Chris. I got a lot of these small Debras.
You know who's got a lot of small Debras in my side of North Carolina?
Who's that?
That would be the place where my wife works. They got a lot of small Debras. They got a lot of hostesses.
So I got a couple of the holiday spice Christmas tree cakes left.
Mm-hmm.
The vanilla and chocolate, they got going, baby.
I have one vanilla left. I could go get it right now.
The Nutty Bars. Marlene and I had to decide which one of us got the last one just before we started recording.
Okay.
But I do still have Holiday Spice Christmas Tree Cakes, so I'm going to pop one of these open and have it while we discuss the Christmas Chronicles.
Okay.
So here's the deal. We've already watched the Christmas Chronicles, but if you haven't yet and you want to, you can hit pause right now, because we're going to have a little musical interlude and an ad here in this portion of the show. Then after that, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Christmas Chronicles. And we are back from our little break before talking about Christmas Chronicles. I do want to make a quick snack situation correction or clarification. Because when we talked about the vanilla Little Debbie Christmas Tree Cakes on the show when we did those, I said, hey, why doesn't Little Debbie make something like this year round? Without really realizing that the zebra cake is pretty close.
What? Wait, what?
Have... The zebra cake is pretty close.
Oh my God. Oh my God, Matt. Oh my God. Matt, this is a real fucking mind blower you got going right now. You should have told me this off mic, because now I'm getting excited.
You're just going to go buy a bunch of zebra cakes?
In January, I might just.
The only main difference is that the zebra cakes have a little bit of chocolate frosting on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it is white, you know, yellow cake, white frosting. White frosting on the outside.
Oh my God. Your abs. Oh, wow. Mind blown.
So have yourself a zebra cake.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, right now have yourself a vanilla Christmas tree cake, because I would say they are better by virtue of being Christmassy.
I would agree. But yeah. In non-Christmas times, the zebra cake is a fair substitute for the Christmas tree cake.
Yeah. Do you think Christmas tree cakes are going to end up being the snack situations Marvel 2-in-1 annual number 7?
We've had multiple people tell us that they went and bought Christmas tree cakes based on our recommendation. They've never had them before.
Any follow-ups?
No. I'm sure they were delicious. If we had steered them wrong, we would have heard.
Yeah. Well, if you tried them and you liked them, hit us up. Holler at your boys.
Speaking of trying something and liking it, the Christmas Boom. Chronicles.
Boom. Crushed it.
I liked this movie.
I really liked this movie, asterisk.
Okay, we'll get to the asterisk.
Okay.
But let's talk about it. The movie starts. The first, like, 10 to 15 minutes of the movie are shockingly dour.
You mean when it's a found footage horror movie for a minute? is that what you're talking about, Matt?
We begin with a montage of Christmas morning videos starting in, when, 2006?
It's, yeah.
Starting around 2006, of a family, the Pierces. And at the beginning, they have one son, but over time, they become a four-part family. Teddy is the son.
Yeah.
There's a daughter named Kate, who comes along in 2008.
Matt, we see the family grow, and then we see the family shrink just a little bit.
Yeah, we see several things in these videos. At one point, Teddy is gifted with a pocket knife with a personalized inscription on it.
About how Goonies never say die, or whatever it is. Pierce's, what is it? Pierce's never take the easy way out.
I believe it's something to the effect of Pierce's always see it through.
A Pierce always sees it through, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
He gets a pocket knife. We find out that the father of the family, who is very into Christmas and is a jolly old soul.
Mm-hmm.
He's a firefighter. The little girl, Kate, by the time she reaches 10 years old, not good at languages.
Very, very specific. I wonder if that's going to come back later.
Another interesting fact that we find out in the videos is that reindeers love to eat candy canes.
Mm-hmm.
These are all seeds that are being planted.
And from those seeds, a mighty oak will grow.
That's true. By the time we get from 2006 to 2018, with some years skipped in the middle, it doesn't go through every year. It just goes through, you know, it skips a year or two every time. By 2018, we find out that the father has sadly passed away.
Yeah, the first thing I said when this movie started and they showed this happy family, I was like, that dad's going to die. That dad who loves Christmas, don't get attached.
And is a firefighter.
Yeah.
We soon find out that he died in the line of duty.
Mm-hmm.
Saving people from a fire.
Which, as far as Christmas movies with people dying at the beginning go, not quite as traumatic as seeing Santa and Mrs. Claus freeze to death in Santa Claus the Movie. But or, it gets pretty grim if you think about it.
Or Santa fall off a roof and get electrocuted like in The Santa Claus.
Yeah, fuck that movie.
Fuck that movie.
It's trash.
So the dad dies. And because of this, the children have particular reactions, let's say.
Boy, do they.
Young Kate decides to continue her father's traditions, including using the camcorder that he would use to shoot the Christmas videos well past its obsolescence.
Yeah.
This is something that is brought up in the dialogue. She could use a smartphone to record, say, a video letter to Santa Claus.
What do you think she's working on there? Like memory stick? What do you think?
She's got tapes.
That's right. She has tapes.
Yeah. The tapes are an important part of the plot of the movie.
That's right.
She has tapes. Bloody.
That magnetic storage is not long for this world, my friend.
She is recording on tapes. It's one of several things that makes me think this movie may have been written some time ago.
I mean, you might be right, but I also feel like the Kate hanging on to the past in a very like constant visual reminder way is a good enough bit that I think it might just be intentional.
It's possible.
Yeah.
There are a few other things that make me think this might be a script that had existed for a while, though.
Okay. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I have some.
But Teddy decides that his reaction to his father's passing is to become a street criminal.
Yeah, a straight up, like, felon.
He becomes a Grand Theft Auto from the video game Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, he becomes your favorite character, Grand Theft Auto.
And literally, we see him steal a car.
Yeah. Which is, hey, is there any resolution to that plot whatsoever? Other than he kind of decides to stop being such a bad kid at the end.
He steals a car for good?
He does steal a car for good, but like, there's never anything where it's like, hey, I did steal that guy's car, though.
I should,
like, maybe, like, unfortunately, that dude had a real shitty Christmas because his Buick got jacked.
Take me to juvie.
I mean, I don't want him to go to juvie, but I mean, like, maybe, I don't know. I don't want him to flip on his friends like Tim Allen did in real life before the filming of the movie The Santa Claus.
Yeah, woo boy. But but we see Teddy and his two idiot friends who don't do anything steal a car. Yeah,
I don't know why they're in the movie other than to like be like, oh, Teddy's not a bad kid. He just fell in with the wrong crowd.
Possibly. But Kate follows him and actually films the act of him stealing a car.
Yeah, Kate's got footage on this bad boy.
And his friends just say, hey, man, hey, Teddy, do your thing. And then Teddy does all the work.
Yeah.
He gets the door open, hot wires the car, then drives it.
Yeah, which means he is the criminal.
He's the full operation.
Yeah. Yikes.
So Kate.
Yikes, Teddy.
Kate goes back home with this tape. And look, Kate is not exactly the special prosecutor. She's not holding on to her evidence until she has a complete case.
You say that, but I feel like she's playing four-dimensional chess.
She is sitting in a chair in her house. By the way, her mom's not home because she is a nurse who constantly gets called into the hospital.
Yeah. So basically this town is just full of people who are dying.
Or at least sick. Or injured.
Yeah. Or injured. Lots of injuries.
Also, I guess it's worth establishing the setting that they are in is Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yeah, which is weird. I mean, it's not weird, but it's like it's kind of very specific for
a very generic.
Yeah, for like what ultimately does not matter.
It's
other than like it's not Chicago.
It's not Chicago. That's the only thing that matters. But they're in Lowell, Massachusetts, the place where Samoa Joe won the NXT title at a house show.
Is that incorporated into this plot at all?
In my headcanon, it is.
Okay.
But she's sitting at home holding the tape. Mom's not there. Teddy comes in. And she just immediately alerts him to the fact that she has damning evidence of his car theft. Teddy, being the hardened criminal that he is, attempts to seize that evidence and destroy it.
Yeah.
That leads to a house-spanning sibling fight that ends with a picture getting knocked over and broken. And the Christmas tree being knocked over.
This sad ass Christmas tree. That's
no lights on it.
I laughed so hard because in all the flashback footage, all the found footage horror movie stuff at the beginning, they have like these beautiful trees. Because of course they do. Because it's, you know, like Christmas is good and their dad is alive and it's the land of perfect day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then when the dad is dead, they get this dead tree. They get this full-on, like, withered, crappy Christmas tree. It's very funny.
Well, there's a lot of implying that they waited to the last minute to do everything for Christmas this year.
Like, is it Christmas Eve at this point? Did that kid steal a car on Christmas Eve?
It might be like December 22nd.
Okay.
Because Christmas Eve is coming. But it's clearly very close to Christmas. And a lot of stuff is not done. There's no lights on the tree. They haven't hung their stockings yet. A lot of Christmas traditions are still waiting. So I think you could.
Matt, I think this is Christmas Eve. I think this entire movie takes place on Christmas Eve.
Possible. But one thing that you could say is that because the family waited so long to prepare for Christmas, they had to take the shitty tree on the Christmas tree lot.
Right.
You know? So I'm going to say that was December 23rd because the next scene, well, first of all, Mom comes in as this fight is ending and says, what is going on?
Yeah.
And Kate says, I have evidence that Teddy did something terrible. Mom says, what? What did you do now?
What did you do now, you terrible child that I have raised?
And Teddy looks very guilty and sad. Kate decides to save her brother in the last minute and says he broke this picture.
Yeah.
Instead of giving up the tape of the car theft.
Now, this is, we have also seen previous to this, there's a moment where Kate is writing a video letter to Santa and Teddy comes in and like starts kind of dunking on her. But then he's like, oh, you don't even know, do you? And she's like, know what? And he's like, Santa doesn't have email or something. Like, he's clearly about to tell her.
Santa only reads written letters on paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause yeah, he can't get to the point of telling her that he doesn't believe in Santa Claus.
Right.
So they both have moments of like getting ready to slam their sibling and deciding not to do it. Then we flash forward some amount of time, perhaps an hour, perhaps a day.
This, I believe, judging by the clothes, is the same day.
Okay.
I've got it. I'm going frame by frame, Matt. I'm Zaprudering this.
Okay. Then it all does take place on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mom and Kate are decorating Christmas cookies. There's some discussion of like, this is the way Dad would have made his cookie with a bunch of sprinkles on it.
Mm-hmm.
Then phone call. Mom's getting called into the hospital to work a night shift, even though she just got home from work.
Yeah.
She's got to go deal with this town's plague outbreak.
This is actually a companion piece to Fear the Walking Dead.
So she's got to go. She leaves. Yeah. She goes to work.
She's out.
And Teddy is about to go leave and do some Christmas Eve crimes. But Mom's leaving for work, so she says,
about to tie antlers on his dog. Go steal Whoville's Christmas.
Mom says, Teddy, you can't leave. You got to stay home with your sister. You got to have Christmas Eve together. I'll see you tomorrow. Early.
Yeah.
In the morning. So she's out.
When I get home at dawn.
Yeah. Teddy's mad that he has to stay. Kate goes to her coping mechanism of watching some of the old videos.
She's going to watch those old videos of the good times when her dad was still alive.
As she's watching, she sees in the corner of the screen a hand dart in and out of the frame and leave a gift under the tree. Aha! Real evidence of Santa Claus. This must be investigated. So she calls to Teddy and says, Teddy, we have to do this. We have to set up cameras and we have to catch Santa Claus in the act of showing up at our house and delivering presents tonight. And she makes a deal with Teddy that if he does this for her, she won't show the car theft video to their mom.
She will turn over her evidence of criminal activity to the criminal to help him avoid justice.
She says, if you cooperate with me, the prosecution.
Cut a deal, Teddy. Be smart.
On a bigger sting operation, I will give you back the evidence. You will be cleared of charges.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy agrees. So they set up cameras. They get ready to film Santa Christmas Eve night. They catch a little bit, but don't actually catch it on video. Yet, they do manage to hear Santa on the rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
So they go outside and they start looking around for Santa. They see Santa going in extremely fast motion from chimney to chimney. Then they find his sleigh with all the reindeer. They catch some footage of that. Then, in an act that could only be described as a mistake, they get in that sleigh.
They do get in that sleigh. Which, I gotta say, you call it a mistake, Matt, if you got the opportunity to get in that sleigh.
But they create, Chris, they create a domino effect. Because Santa, after making his rounds in Lowell, Massachusetts, gets back in that sleigh, and he takes off. He takes off, baby.
Mm-hmm.
He's headed to Boston.
Which, Santa does not seem to... by the end of this movie, we will learn this pretty well. Santa does not seem to travel in any sort of predictable pattern.
No, he also only hits major metropolitan areas.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe he knocks out the small ones first.
Possibly. It does not go in the pattern you would necessarily expect. Based on time zones.
Yeah. Which are a big deal in this film.
They are a big deal. So, Santa heads off to Boston, but as he's headed on his way, he notices two stowaways.
Well, he doesn't notice them. Kate tries to talk to him and ends up startling him.
That's right. Yes.
Startled Santa. I startle him.
And he loses control of the sleigh.
Can I tell you the fundamental problem with this, Matt?
Santa would never lose control of the sleigh?
Well, yes, but Santa should never be surprised by children. He knows when you're awake, Matt.
He knows when you're awake. He doesn't know when you're in his sleigh.
But he knows these two children instinctively are awake.
Fair. I'm willing to give this a pass.
I mean, look, it's a minor nitpick, but we've got a lot of show to fill.
I'm willing to give this a pass. What is startling, though, is the level of catastrophe that occurs because of this. The sleigh goes like almost vertical, like straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Kate comes tumbling out.
You mean like honestly?
Straight up, now tell me. Are you really going to ride this sleigh forever?
Uh-huh.
Grab my sleigh to hit and run. But Kate comes tumbling out of the sleigh to the point where Santa has to very quickly readjust. And the closed captions at this point describe Santa as speaking Elvish.
Yeah, which is interesting in this film because it's kind of like it's kind of like, you know, Norwegian, I think.
It's kind of like Swedish Chef.
It's kind of like Swedish Chef, if we're going to be completely honest. There's a little bit of bork, bork, bork to it.
A little bit of bork, bork, bork.
I wonder, though, do you think Kurt Russell picked up Norwegian on the set of The Thing? And this is like him bringing it back?
Could be. Could
be. He's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy.
Hey, I love Kurt Russell.
Same. Santa has to readjust, fly down quickly, so that Teddy can reach out, grab Kate's hand, bring her back onto the sleigh. Mm-hmm. Seems like things are all right now. But brother, they go even more wrong.
Yeah. If you thought things were all right, guys, I got some bad news. There might not be a Christmas this year.
Because, first of all, a device on Santa's sleigh gets tripped. The sleigh goes way off course.
It goes into subspace. It goes into hyperspace, Matt.
Halfway across the country.
Mm-hmm.
The sack of toys falls out. The reindeer get separated from the sleigh.
The reindeer scatter. And I gotta say, I would think Santa's reindeer would be way more well-trained than this, but apparently not.
Santa has to prepare for a crash landing.
Mm-hmm.
He pops out the wings on the sleigh. He tells Kate and Teddy, brace yourselves. They smash into the snow. Santa and the kids have crash landed in Chicago, Illinois.
That's right, Matt. Your old stomping grounds.
Old stomping grounds.
Ain't no cookouts there.
There are not. What's interesting about the Chicago of this film is how in the wide shots, it's Chicago. And in the non-wide shots, it is so strangely like Vancouver.
It's weird that we have watched enough CW that we can identify Vancouver.
Actually, it's Toronto. It's not Vancouver.
Oh, is it the T-Dot?
It's the T-Dot. It's Toronto. Oh. But looks like Chicago in the wide shots. Looks like not Chicago in the close-up shots. They've crash-landed. Santa makes an assessment of the situation and says, we've lost the toy sack. We've lost the reindeer. I got to go find them real quick. Kids, bye.
Yeah. You kind of glossed over it, Matt, but this is our introduction to Daddy. He's still got it. And that beard, oh.
I was wondering through the whole movie how real that beard was.
I don't know. I legitimately do not know that.
I mean, it's clearly his hair and beard are colored, whitened. Yeah. But I wouldn't doubt that Kurt Russell could grow a beard that size. Certainly around the where it was growing out of his face, it looked like a real beard.
Yeah. He looks extremely good.
Perhaps the length of the beard is embellished somehow. I don't know if you could have beard extensions.
Oh, yeah, you can. I remember, I think it was Jeff Bridges talking about this when he did True Grit, that he was, he just stopped shaving and they would kind of weave in beard extensions while his beard grew in.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened here. The beard is impressive, though.
It's a real GL, real good look.
What we're talking about, this version of Santa Claus, as you described him, the daddy. In some ways, this is not the Santa Claus we know.
He makes a big deal about not being fat.
Yeah.
Which is easy laughs, I guess.
But he's not super skinny either.
No, he's thick.
He's thick.
Two C's.
You know, maybe there is the scene later when he's in the jail where he's wearing the least clothes.
Uh-huh.
Where he's the thinnest.
Yeah.
And he's maybe a little jacked.
I mean, look, you know what Kurt Russell looks like. Kurt Russell, by the way, when he came back to do Escape from New York, he still had his costume, or Escape from LA. He still had his costume from Escape from New York, and it still fit.
Yeah.
That was 20 years before.
Kurt Russell's the best.
He's so good.
I guess Santa just has mass.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Well, he's wearing a big winter coat.
Yeah.
His
coat. This Santa wears a leather coat, by the way.
Red leather, baby.
Also, he makes a point to note that he does not say ho, ho, ho.
No, he does not. Which, I am always very annoyed when I read something. And this happens all the time with vampires, right? Garth Ennis does this all the time for a dude who has written so many stories about vampires. It's always we're vampires, but we're not the ones you know about.
Right.
And that always bugs me because I prefer the, yeah, it's all true. Everything's true. They got to count rice if you throw it on the ground. It's all true. but there's always this is that, but for Santa, this is I'm Santa Claus, but I don't say ho, ho, ho.
I'm a cool Santa Claus.
And also I am the sexiest man alive.
So he tells them about his plan to go find the reindeer and the sack of toys, but dagnabbit, he lost his hat. And wouldn't you know it, that the thing that gives him all his Santa powers is his hat.
This is where the power lies, brother.
So he's like, okay, kids, bye. I got to go find my stuff and my hat and I got to walk. So I'm leaving you in Chicago.
Yeah. Because you ruined Christmas.
You're on the naughty list for life.
Do you want to talk about the most batshit crazy thing that happens in this scene, Matt?
Please tell me.
Well, Santa says, you've ruined Christmas. We're not going to have Christmas because of what you've done. Which means that if we don't have Christmas, if Christmas spirit drops low, I have missed Christmas before, and that resulted in the Dark Ages and wars.
Yes.
Santa is directly responsible for all manner of atrocities, it seems. Santa caused the collapse of the Roman Empire and also, I guess, World War I. You know, take it as far as you want and remind yourself that the movie is making you do this.
Via negligence.
Because it's not enough to just not have Christmas.
So here's the idea. When there's not Christmas spirit, people get real cranky.
Yeah, and sometimes they get cranky enough to mobilize.
They get real cranky. And so Santa's not directly killing anybody, but through his inaction, he causes people to be cranky to the point of doing the murders.
Yeah, like straight up murders.
So
war, Matt, he talks about wars.
He talks about wars.
Bonkers.
Wild. So Santa goes stomping off and the kids follow him. He sees an Irish pub. They're on the street.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Nick's Place.
Uh-huh. Oh, is this where he talks about not being St. Nicholas, or is that later?
That's later.
Okay. Because that... Why?
But I think the Irish pub being called Nick's Place is not about St. Nicholas.
Okay.
I think it's a Wonderful Life reference.
Okay.
It's a bar called Nick's.
Yeah. You got it.
I love that. Santa and the kids go in the bar. They talk to a hostess.
She's the cool girl from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
There you go.
Yeah.
They talk to a hostess who is a little weirded out by the whole situation. Because here's a guy who looks like Santa. He's got two kids with him. And he's telling her stuff about her life that nobody should know.
Yeah.
Like she wanted to be a fashion designer,
mm-hmm.
but couldn't afford to go to school in New York. She made her mother a scarf for Christmas. She is the only person in the film, or one of only maybe two or three people in the film, who actually is convinced by this.
Yeah. She's sort of like, oh, what? Like she's down.
Yeah.
She goes with it. I like her. I hope she becomes a main character in the next movie.
She takes money out of her pocket, her tip money, which hostesses don't get tipped. I don't know what that's about. But she takes her tip money out of her pocket and says, here's money for a cab. I don't know if it's enough, but here's money. And Santa says, no, you don't have to give us that. We're going to get somebody in the restaurant here, in the bar here, to help us out. But thank you. So Santa goes into the dining area and starts talking to all the people in there about their lives in their first languages. And they are not convinced somehow.
Very unconvinced.
It's buck wild. There's one guy who owns a Porsche who's about to hand over the keys to his Porsche. And his wife's like, don't do that. This is a crazy, weird man. How dare you? Another lady calls the police about a weird bearded man being there with kidnapped children. It might be an Amber Alert situation. Teddy realizes what's going on and tries to get Santa out of there, starts calling him Grandpa, and tries to get him out of there. Just then, the bartender says, like, okay, the three of you out of here. And Santa leans into this guy, just launches into him. Talks about how this guy is on the Naughty List Hall of Fame. He's a hardened criminal, just got out of jail like 3 months ago. Somehow he got his bartender job back, so good for him.
Maybe he's Nick. Maybe this is his place.
It's not Nick. They say his name. I don't remember what it is. But also, he, that morning, stole a red Dodge Challenger. Santa lays that out for him. They go outside. Finally, they are forced to leave. They go outside. The convict, well, they're forced to leave because the convict pulls out a bat and is like, I'm going to beat the shit out of you now.
Yeah, which is weird.
I mean, you know, I've been in bars where that's likely to happen. And he starts chasing after them. The hostess, who is a believer, throws some ice on the ground, makes the bartender slip so Santa and the kids can get outside. And they see that very red Dodge Challenger parked right there on the street. And the keys are at the valet station. Teddy grabs those keys. And Santa says, no, 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 we're not stealing a car. And Teddy says, we're not stealing the car. That car's already stolen. We're just going to take the car. And then when we're done with it, we're going to turn it over to the police. Somehow this convinces Santa to steal this car.
Yeah, he's cool with it. But, you know, Santa, he does breaking and enterings all the time. So
that is,
he's willing to bend the law.
That is brought up as the justification for stealing a car several times. That Santa illegally enters people's homes. So they take the car. The bartender runs after them but doesn't get to them. But someone does inform the bartender that they called the police to report the car stolen, which the bartender is not too happy about.
So we get some driving around Chicago looking for the reindeer.
Then we get about a 5-minute commercial for the wonderful handling and immense power of the Dodge Challenger.
If anyone's looking to get some podcast play on that, Matt and I will sell out, and we are cheaper than you think.
It's just incredible to hear Kurt Russell as Santa Claus being like, I've traded in 8 reindeer for 400 horses.
pretty wild.
He's really selling it.
Yeah. So they chase after some reindeer, but then the cops get involved, and the cops naturally also don't believe that Santa is Santa. And he ends up getting arrested and taken to jail while these children are left to save Christmas for themselves.
Yeah, so Kate goes off and momentarily finds the reindeer. So I forget how she ends up getting out of the car. But she gets out of the car, goes and finds the reindeer. Santa and Teddy remain in the car and end up doing a jump as they escape from the police and land in some snow. The police get them. Santa gets arrested. He gives Teddy a device that will help them find the sack of toys so that they can then find the elves.
Now, by the way, so far, pretty standard Christmas stuff, right?
Sure.
Like, basically, for me, at this point, I was like, oh, this is just kind of a better version of the Santa Claus, you know? Santa doesn't die in the opening moments. These kids are kind of, you know, grumpy, but they're good kids at heart. They seem to actually care about each other.
We got a death, but it wasn't Santa's death.
Things are bad. We leave the land of perfect day pretty easily, Matt.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah. It's been pretty standard Christmas fare. The kids fly away on reindeer. They say which reindeer that they're on.
Mm-hmm. I actually really like this because it Kate sees the tag or whatever, the collar, I guess the reins. I don't know. And she's like, oh, you're Prancer. I'm a big fan. which I thought was really good.
Yeah. You're the Prancer? I think it's Comet, actually. She's like, you're the Comet? I can't believe it. Like, there would be some other reindeer there.
Yeah.
But I think she ends up riding Comet, and Teddy ends up riding Dasher, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So,
but Santa gets taken off to jail.
Yeah, Santa gets taken off to jail. Now, Matt, we've basically been doing this movie in real time, so I want to skip ahead just a little bit and talk about Santa in jail.
Okay, before we get to that, though, we got to talk about the two cops.
Let's talk about the two cops.
There are two Chicago police officers, Dave and Mikey.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Mikey is the guy who played Winston on New Girl.
Uh-huh.
He is one, at first, most likely to believe that this is really Santa Claus. Then he sees the reindeer flying away, and he's like, the reindeer are flying. The reindeer are flying. Everybody turn around and look. Everybody, look at that. So he believes for the rest of the movie, but none of the other cops will listen to him.
Yeah.
The other cop, Dave, is the hardest sell.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes into convincing Dave, and it's some very convincing things.
There's an interrogation scene where Santa first pulls every toy that Dave ever wanted as a kid out of his coat and presents it to him. Dave realizes that they frisked him, so he could not have had those things on his person.
Mm-hmm.
Santa tells him, yeah, I'm Santa.
It's weird that this is a shot for shot recreation of the interrogation scene from The Dark Knight.
It really is. And you remember when the Joker pulled everything that Batman ever wanted as a kid out of his jacket?
Mm-hmm.
Then Santa says,
two parents.
I know. He says, I know what you want for Christmas. You want to get back together with your ex-wife. And Dave freaks out about this for a while. But instead of saying, like, you could only know this if you really know me, he says, you're some kind of weird hacker who's, like, intruding on people's personal lives.
Uh-huh. That's how that works, I'm pretty sure.
Like, what does it take? I mean, we eventually find out what it takes.
Yeah. It takes the intervention of the E Street Band, but we'll get to that.
Lil Stevie.
Yeah, good old Stephen Van Zandt, who wrote Nobody Ought to Be Alone on Christmas, the theme to Home Alone 2, an actual really good Christmas song, sung by Miss Darlene Love.
That's right.
They put Santa in a holding cell. There's some ladies in the adjoining cell, and Santa's like, hey, ladies, I'm going to get out some new outfits for you and also some instruments for the other people who are in this drunk tank with me, who, yes, it's the E Street Band. It's Lil Steven.
We also discover that this is the busiest night they've ever had on Christmas Eve at the Cook County Jail. Which
is hard to believe that there is not like a state of emergency.
I can imagine that the Cook County Jail often has a pretty busy night on Christmas Eve. But this one is especially busy because Christmas spirit is getting low and people are getting grumpy.
Yep. Matt, you used to live in Chicago.
I did.
If this is the busiest night in the Cook County Jail, I'm not going to ask you how many murders are happening. I think we can just move on. It's a cute movie.
It is a cute movie. Inside the jail, though, it's a great, great time. Santa hands out the new outfits. He hands out all the instruments. And there is a hell of a musical number called Santa Claus is Back in Town.
A full musical number.
It is the original Elvis song performed by Kurt Russell and the E Street Band.
Yeah. Bonkers. Now, this is not even the weirdest thing that happens in the second half of this film. So, Kate and
Teddy.
Travis?
Teddy.
Teddy, thank you. Teddy finds the toy sack and is then accosted by street toughs.
Yeah. After he has a highly emotional moment on some church steps about how his dad would not be proud of him.
And the street toughs, well, they find the sack, right? And Kate just goes up inside there.
Yep.
She goes and finds that there is basically a present world.
Right inside. To the sack. There's a present world inside. And it eventually teleports her to the North Pole.
Yes. Meanwhile, Teddy is being menaced by street toughs. With, like, one dude has a teardrop tattoo.
They are a wonderfully multicultural gang of three street toughs.
Uh-huh. And they're like, well, we're going to take that bag. And you're going to... I'm very unclear on their motives, Matt. Why do they take Teddy back to headquarters?
They think that there's something valuable in that bag because he wants to protect it so much.
Uh-huh, Because his sister's in there.
But because he's like, I can't let you take that bag, that makes them want the bag even more. These United Colors of Benetton want that bag real bad. Mm-hmm. So they throw Teddy and the bag in a car, take him back to HQ. The criminals start reaching in the bag, taking out presents, looking for what's in there. Every box they pull out is full of coal.
You're doing a voice, but that's a good bit.
It is a good bit.
That's a really good bit, actually.
Just like big old hunks of coal. Then once all they get is coal, the boss decides, all right, screw this. I'm just going to burn this bag.
Yeah, he throws Santa's toy sack, which, as far as Teddy knows, has his sister in it, into an incinerator.
Yes.
Wild, Matt.
But just then, a bunch of elves pop out of the bag.
Okay, we got to go back to the elves.
Yeah.
So, you know those minions?
The minions, yeah.
Everybody's favorite guys. Banana. That's what they say, right? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I don't know either.
Bananas. I'm a minion, everybody. I'm Charles.
I'm the one with one eye.
I've got overall. Anyway, minions. Kids love them. What if minions were elves? Now, this was done, I think, to a much less effectively in Rise of the Guardians, where the elves are just weird little fuck-ups and everything is actually done by Yetis, which is honestly pretty cool. But these are like straight up, let's get some merchandise out of this, which I know because they were at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. They had like, I believe they had a float.
Okay. To some degree, they are minion-esque.
Uh-huh.
In that they speak a gibberish.
Possibly Norwegian. Don't get us letters.
A cutesy gibberish version of Elvish.
Uh-huh.
Right? But, and they have like different like weird personalities. Like one of them's really old. However, they are also hyper competent, which I think separates them somewhat from minions.
Yeah. No, these are Santa's elves. These are the elves that make the toys.
Yeah.
They also are willing to kill.
Oh, yeah.
And the movie is very explicit about that.
But they also don't look like minions. But they don't look like elves. They're like little furry guys.
Yeah, they don't. They look like Mogwais.
They do look like Mogwais.
Yeah, they're very Gizmo-esque. And I mean, look.
Highly toyetic.
They're highly toyetic. And, you know, you say they don't look like minions. They don't not look like minions either.
But they're not like yellow.
They're not yellow, but they're
furry.
They're marketable.
They're very marketable, yes.
They're toyetic. That's what it is.
So Kate encounters them at the North Pole after looking through, you know, if you were in a room full of letters to Santa, maybe you would go directly to your family's file and look up all your brother's letters to Santa and find that he wrote one to Santa this year.
Mm-hmm.
And in that letter, he said in a super sad way, "I just want to see my dad again."
It's sad.
It's super sad. Around the time that she finds that letter and reads it, the elves show up and don't know what she's doing there. And she has to explain, just as if she's about to be like stabbed and burned.
Yeah. Yeah. They tie her up. They tie her up in Christmas lights, and then they're gonna burn her with a torch.
She says, "I'm helping Santa. He crashed the sleigh. The reindeer got lost. The bag got dropped, and he lost his hat. We got to help him." And the elves say, "Oh, we got to help Santa? Okay, let's go." So they pop out of the bag, and suddenly they are being thrown into an incinerator by a crime boss.
Yeah. So again, the elves will kill.
Yep. They beat the shit out of these criminals. They
beat the shit out of these criminals, and one of them has a chainsaw.
Oh yeah.
Matt, one of them has a chainsaw.
And they at one point they think Teddy is one of the criminals, and they are about to cut Teddy's dick off with that chainsaw.
Yep. 100%. That's not a bit. We're not doing.
They are threatening his dick.
Yeah, fully. If you were like, what's good to watch in the Christmas season with my family, all the kids around? Here's a movie with a dead firefighter and some dick trauma.
It's a real. Do you expect me to talk elves? No, Mr. Teddy. I expect you to have your dick cut off situation.
With a chainsaw.
Yeah.
With a chainsaw.
A little toy elf-sized chainsaw.
A little kitty cat looking elf is gonna cut this kid's dick off with a chainsaw.
The elves and the kids, Teddy's dick is safe. The elves and the kids.
Oh.
Go to the Cook County Jail. And just as Dave is finally convinced that Santa is Santa because he did a big musical number inside the jail.
Right.
He's opened the jail cell for him. The elves cut a vent out of the ceiling of the jail cell.
Is it with the chainsaw or the blowtorch? Because, yeah, they also, you know that part in Pulp Fiction where Marcellus says he's going to get some bad motherfuckers with pliers and blowtorches? He means the elves from the movie The Christmas Chronicles.
I believe it is a blowtorch. And they toss Santa his hat. Santa doesn't even go out the door that he's being invited by the police officer to exit the jail. Instead, he puts his hat on and just fucking disappears.
Yeah. Matt, Santa don't use doors. Santa.
He busts up out through the roof of the Cook County Jail. And then it's time to go, baby. It's time to go.
Yeah, we got to save Christmas.
Santa's like, okay, we got to go. Oh, shit, I lost track of time. We only have about an hour before sunrise. And we still have, there's too many houses to finish. But the kids are like, hey, we'll help you. I can toss presents out of the sleigh. Kate says, I can toss presents out of the sleigh to you as you just go from house to house so you don't have to come back to the sleigh. Save you some time. And then Santa's like, oh, but I got to have Teddy driving. And Teddy's like, no, I can't drive that sleigh. And Santa goes, Teddy, I've seen you drive.
I can't drive that sleigh. It's not even stolen.
It's not even stolen. But Santa convinces Teddy to drive. So they go to a weird random assortment of cities.
Yep.
And deliver the rest of the presents to North America. Oh, but turns out, as they think they've finished, as the sun rises, there's one house they forgot in Mexico City. So they got to hoof it back to Mexico City. There's no chimney, so Santa's got to go in through the window. Also, by the way, a lot of chimneys in Chicago. A lot of chimneys in the city of Chicago.
Uh-huh. Do they not have chimneys up there? Is it too windy for the chimneys, Matt?
I don't think the windiness is the main issue.
Are the shoulders too broad?
That's what it is. Everybody's shoulders are too broad. They had to remove all the chimneys from the homes because everybody's shoulders were too broad. They go back to Mexico City. Santa delivers the last gift. He sits down for one brief moment of respite.
He got to eat that cookie.
He eats a cookie. Maybe it's the only cookie he's eaten all night.
I think it is because, you know, he's been in jail.
Yep. He eats that cookie. Kid comes out. She sees Santa. She's shocked. There's Santa. She runs back to yell for her mom. But then Santa's gone. They head back to Lowell, Massachusetts. Santa drops Teddy and Kate off at their house. And then Santa lets them on a little secret. He didn't need the hat.
Yeah, he never needed the hat. The whole thing, Matt, was a long con. It was the entire movie was a ruse to teach these children that they should be happy with each other and that they can be happy with their dead dad.
And that Teddy should not do crimes.
And that Teddy should maybe not do crimes, except for all of his crime skills come in extremely handy over the course of this Christmas adventure.
Okay, but let's think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of crime happened because Christmas spirit got way low.
It was the busiest night in the history of the Cook County Jail.
Christmas almost didn't happen.
Maybe it's busy, but it's just like, you know, a lot of people mad at traffic.
But like, okay. At what point would Santa have been like, okay, this was fun. I was trying to teach him a lesson, but now I really got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's drop the whole thing about the hat. We got to get out of here.
I mean, I don't, that depends, Matt, on whether you think Santa is fallible or whether he knows from moment one, he can see the patterns. Like Lucy from the movie Lucy, or Limitless from the movie Limitless.
Maybe. Like, do you, okay, real question. We know Santa has an omniscient view of the present.
Uh-huh. Sees you when you're sleeping.
He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good.
Mm-hmm.
He's got an encyclopedic knowledge of the past. He knows all your behavior through the whole year. He has an omniscient view of the present.
Mm-hmm.
Can Santa see the future?
I don't know, Matt. Because here's the thing.
You got to send him letters.
He knows if you've been bad or good. He sees you when you're sleeping, knows when you're awake. But, you know, you still have to ask him for what you want.
Do you have to ask him for what you want because you have to show – it's like prayer. God, like Santa knows what you want, but you have to show a willingness to talk to him.
I mean, that's – I mean, well, are we?
I understand that these are theological questions.
Yeah, you're really getting into some intense stuff that I was not prepared for. I just wanted to maybe get a milkshake.
Okay. So anyway, it's been a ruse the whole time. Santa taught him a lesson.
Yeah.
Mom
but
comes
it all
home.
Worked out. It worked out exactly as he wanted it to.
It worked
presumably
out.
With, which I made a joke about the Dark Knight, but apparently it's, getting captured and put in jail was part of Santa's plan.
It's exactly like the Joker's plan in the Dark Knight. 100% exactly.
And he's
the same.
Going. It's except he's going to prove that people are basically good instead of proving that they are basically evil.
That's true.
Santa, also, he doesn't like explode a guy with a cell phone in his tummy.
Santa gets out of Dodge before Mom gets home. Mom gets home. Kate, Teddy, Mom, they all walk in the house. It looks exactly like it does. It did on Christmas when Dad was alive. That sad dead tree, it's been replaced by a beautiful, lush, full tree. There are presents under the tree. Kate got the skateboard she wanted so she could be just like Teddy. And Teddy got a new ornament with his dad's ghost in it?
No. It's not. No. His wish was to see his dad. And when he has that moment on the church steps, Kate is like, I see Dad in you. And so when he looks at his reflection, he momentarily sees the face of his father. It's magical realism, Matt.
Okay. And he says, I'm proud of you to the reflection. And the reflection says back to him, I'm proud of you. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
Then we get one little epilogue where Santa is hanging out at the North Pole, checking his list, taking a much needed relaxation after a long night of work and being in jail. Who shows up but Mrs. Claus?
Mm-hmm.
And they recap a little bit of the events of the night. And the big gag is that it's Goldie Hawn.
Yeah. Kurt Russell's real life partner, I guess.
His lady love.
Yeah.
And that is the end of the film.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Oh, also at one point he says ho, ho, ho.
Oh, yeah.
Kate asks him to.
Yeah, it's at the end. He goes, ho, 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 which is it's a very good ho, ho, ho.
But it's like a very intense ho, ho, ho.
But then you make it sound mean.
It's more it just intense. Chris, let's discuss the high points of the Christmas Chronicles.
Big number one there is Daddy.
Yeah, Mr. Kurt Russell is a wonderful and delightful, cool Santa Claus.
Yes. There was a moment where I had some, not resentment, but I mean, look, it's not the movie I wanted in my head when I first heard about it, which was Kurt Russell starring in an adaptation of Grant Morrison and Dan Morris Claus, which is maybe what this movie should have been, but you know. But he's a good, cool Santa.
What I like about this version of Santa is how he is a cool Santa Claus who sings Elvis songs and talks about how he's not fat and doesn't say ho, ho, ho,
mm-hmm.
but is recognizably in all ways Santa Claus.
Yeah, he likes kids. Like, he takes care of kids. He's really nice to, I mean, he does the, you know, you two are on the naughty list, but throughout the movie, he's really good to Katie.
The only thing in the movie that I think doesn't fit is when he's just going to like leave these two kids from Massachusetts and Chicago.
Yeah. Which when you watch the movie, knowing that it's a weird
trick
bit, like a yeah. scheme, he's doing a scheme on him, Matt.
Talk about four-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that makes more sense when that happens. But like, he is good to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to see the inherent good in everyone. He wants to bring the magic of Christmas to everyone. And that shines through.
The bits where he's interacting with other people and like, you know, talking about what they wanted for Christmas and what they were like when they were kids. There's a lot of really good stuff in that. I'm not like crazy about him being, you know, like, oh, this guy stole a car. He's a terrible person. But also like, I like that he, you know, all the people in the drunk tank, he is cool with, you know.
He immediately befriends all of them.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy pretty much all the acting in this movie. I think
The kids are actually really good.
The kids are both very good. The mom is great as like a mom who lost her husband, but she's doing her best for these kids, even though she's got to work all the time. The dad doesn't get a ton of screen time, but he makes a big impact in the screen time he gets.
Yeah. Also, I'll go ahead and say it. I like the elves.
It sounded like when we were talking about them earlier, you thought you had a little bit of a negative feeling toward them.
Look, they're very Minion-esque, and they're very obviously put in here for a reason, and they're completely bizarre, and they're willing to kill, which is weird.
They are trained killers.
They are definitely down to end lives for the cause of Christmas.
They're builders. They're also cleaners.
They build with one hand and destroy with the other. Do you think Santa issues a license to kill like Her Majesty's government?
Every elf has a 00 designation.
Yeah, which means every elf has killed twice. anyway, like, but design-wise, I think... Now, look, low point, one of them does floss at one point. The dance. We get some flossing in this. It's 2018, so had to happen. But... like, I think they're cute designs, and I think there's a lot of potential in these elves as, like, Santa's weird bloodthirsty toy makers. Because they're kind of... they're on that weird gray area between Christmas elves and, like, the Fae.
I don't mind the elves. They're not my number one fave. I like them more than I like Minions.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I feel like they have more personality. They're less gimmicky. The designs are less painful to my eyes.
Yeah, the Minions designs, boy. I mean, look, I know we're not the target on that, but
they're not nice to look at. Yeah, they are not nice to look at.
They are distinctly unpleasant.
The elves here are not ugly.
No, I think they're a pretty neat design, all things considered. Like, I think the problem with the Rise of the Guardians elves was that they were intentionally ugly.
And I actually like the conceit of the elves speaking Elvish. Mm-hmm. The first character we hear speak it is Santa.
Yeah.
And eventually, we left this out of the recap, Kate learns it through immersion, I guess?
Through Christmas magic. I mean, like, because, oh, I'm not good at languages, but she instantly learns Elvish, like, reading a book.
Another high point, I think, of the movie is that there are a ton of seeds planted in the first 10 to 15 minutes of the movie that pay off. There are payoffs to stuff that gets planted in the movie. From Kate not being good with languages. The saying about a Pierce always sees it through.
Mm-hmm.
Even the knife comes back.
The knife comes back.
I don't remember exactly how it gets used, but it gets used to like repair something in the sleigh at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything that gets seeded in the first 15 or so minutes of the movie comes back. And even the stuff with the dad resolves. Like we talk about all the time, movies we watch for movie fighters, things getting set up and then not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And this movie does not do that.
Nope. Everything is tied up very neatly.
And it looks nice. It
looks like a movie.
A very well shot, nice looking film. The reindeer look great. The special effects are good. Very good looking movie. All right, Chris, what are our low points?
Matt, I do not often say this about the media I consume. I think there might be a little too much going on here.
Interesting. Because I have sort of a counterpoint.
Okay. Like, I like a lot of the second half of the movie. And I like a lot of the first half of the movie. But it's this movie gets to a point where it is suddenly like very odd. They want to do like they want to have the elves involved, but the elves don't show up until very late in the film. Like it's
yeah, almost
there's a very sudden turn.
They don't show up until almost two thirds of the way through. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's when the movie, like, you know, why is there a big musical number? Like there's a lot of stuff that just kind of happens and is a little overwhelming from a plot standpoint, which I don't necessarily dislike, but I mean, if you're going to do Crank for Christmas, then you need to start with it, right? Like it needs to be that from moment one. And this is not.
I have a weird counter low point.
Okay.
Which is that I had an expectation that the story of this movie was going to heighten when it didn't.
Okay, interesting.
Because usually for films like this, where it's like something goes wrong and then continues to go wrong until in the third act things get fixed, you have an expectation that stuff will go wronger, right? Mm-hmm. Like take, for example, Home Alone.
Mm-hmm.
When Catherine O'Hara goes from not being able to get a flight to like asking people around the airport for help to get somewhere. Then she ends up riding with a polka band. There's several different legs to her trip back to Kevin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Santa goes to going to jail feels like it should be the first part in a series of mishaps for Santa or like follies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But basically Santa gets arrested and goes to jail and that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's because the movie is structured in a weird way where it hits a point where there's three different things going on. You're following Santa in jail doing a musical number. That's weird. That's a lot. That's a big buy.
Sure.
You're following Teddy? The names just rinse right off my head.
It's Teddy.
You're following Teddy getting accosted by criminals who want to burn his sister alive. That's intense.
Criminals then, who are hanging out by like a huge church, by the way.
Yeah. Then you have Kate having the adventure with the elves. And that's three very disparate plots that just don't, they come together, but not in a, they're a lot is the thing.
They're a lot. And yeah, I think you're right. Instead of stacking mishaps on top of each other that mm-hmm. heighten, there are just several mishaps happening laterally.
Yeah.
Happening concurrently. One last thing about the script. I feel at times like the script of this movie or the finished story of this movie is operating at cross purposes. Because I said, and I have a suspicion that this is a script that's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
At times I felt like there were just lines thrown in to explain away the fact that this 10-year-old girl is using a camcorder with tapes
mm-hmm.
to record Santa Claus, who then takes the tape away at the end of the movie. So she doesn't have evidence of Santa Claus anymore. There's just a couple lines to be like, why are you using that old thing? That's old. In some sense, I feel like there is a push to make this movie timeless. So maybe that's not why she's not using an iPhone or Samsung Galaxy
mm-hmm.
to record her videos. It's why when Teddy steals a car, it's kind of an old car. There's no like mention of like some new toy that the kids want for Christmas. She wants a skateboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like all the toys that Santa shows to Officer Dave are old toys.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, there's an elf flossing. And
very, very 2018. I would bet that's like the last thing that was added to the movie.
What amounts to, again, a 5 minute long ad for the Dodge Challenger. So there's a lot of like seemingly concerted effort to make this a timeless movie with a handful of very 2018 things mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little jarring.
Yeah.
And I understand that that's maybe a necessity to get this movie made. Like Netflix had to be like, oh, we got to put that car in there.
Mm-hmm.
To get to, for the movie to happen at all.
Maybe she's using the camcorder because they couldn't get that clutch Apple product placement.
Maybe so. But it just, I don't know. I would like it more if it felt totally timeless.
Sabrina is weirdly like that, where some people have landlines and some people have smartphones, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think Sabrina is that way just because, like, the witches are old-fashioned. That's the way you explain that away. But
yeah, but I mean, like, it's, it kind of, you know, you don't see a cell phone in that movie for, like, eight episodes, or in that show for, like, eight episodes. Like, it's...
And, right, and also, like, there are old-timey coal miners.
Yeah. Oh, Sabrina's great. That one's got a Christmas special this year.
I watched that Christmas special, and it ruled.
I have not watched it yet. Very excited.
It's very good. It's very good.
Matt, let's do final thoughts.
Chris, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why is this movie called The Christmas Chronicles?
Okay. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about. I assume this movie is called The Christmas Chronicles because there will be future Christmas Chronicles. Like, there's no way that this is not getting a sequel, right? Like, it got 20 million people watching it, or 20 million streams.
It definitely feels like it was made to have a sequel. I think that's why we revisit Santa at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of ending on the kids.
Yeah.
Who are, well,
because their story's done, right?
They're the protagonists of the movie. But Kurt Russell's Santa is the one who's going to go on into other movies.
Yeah. So here's my question for you. What would you want from a sequel to this? What do you want from Christmas Chronicles 2, Matt?
Well, before I answer that, I feel like calling this movie The Christmas Chronicles undersells it. Don't you think this movie should be called, like, The Christmas Chronicles,
A New
Jailbird Hope. Santa?
Yeah, no, I think this movie is in dire need of a subtitle.
Like, something that lets us know the content of the movie. Because The Christmas Chronicles makes you think that it's going to be, like, a history of Santa Claus or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a movie about one Christmas that almost goes horribly wrong. But I feel like what this movie sets up is a version of Santa Claus who has to help a new child or set of children every movie with some loss of belief or faith.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sequel, I mean, we've already done dead parent, kid who's a criminal, right? So what could be the problem that the kid has in the next movie?
I don't know, Matt. What problem would you give to a child?
There's a very, very real balance that needs to be struck between, you need to feel for the kid, but it can't be too sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it's a whole town in the second one, like the mill or the factory that employed everybody in the town is closing down. And so that town is heavily economically depressed that year. And so Santa has to come in and revitalize the Christmas spirit of this whole town. How about that?
Do kids really care about economics? Matt, is my question for you.
But because of the economic impact on the parents, they can't afford for Christmas to happen. Like, Christmas is not going to happen in that town that year. Okay. See where I'm going?
Yeah, yeah. Here's my pitch.
Okay.
You bring back Santa.
Uh-huh.
You bring back Goldie Hawn. You beef up the role for Mrs. Claus.
Of course.
And so we get, like, you know, some very cute stuff with the two of them.
But based on that last scene, it feels like...
Absolutely.
She will have to be a character in the next movie.
Yeah, 100%. Then, you know who else you bring back? Is Vella Lovell, who is the hostess at the bar, who now knows Santa Claus is 100% real.
Okay.
And so you basically do, like, a fun version of Blade. Like a happy version of Blade, where instead of finding out that, like, vampires are real, someone finds out that Santa is real and elves are real. And she's young and cool enough that she's, you know, relatable, but she's not a kid. You know, we've gotten the kid thing. So they have to, like, you know, she comes back and she's, like, looking for Santa. Because she's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Santa Claus came into my job last year.
Then what happens?
Matt, I don't know. I'm not giving it all away for free.
That's for the screenwriter. I'm just the idea man.
Look, as long as you don't make it a movie about Christmas 2 and the patch present, you're pretty much, like, in the running for best Santa movie ever. Here's what happens, Matt. Christmas almost doesn't happen, but then it does.
How about this for the second one?
Okay.
An imposter shows up claiming to be the real Santa Claus on the basis of sightings of the real Santa Claus last year in Chicago. And he is very willing to say ho, ho, ho. And he's a rotund fellow.
You know who it is. You know who it is, Matt.
Hit me.
Jeff Bridges.
Whoa. I was going to say John Goodman, but either one is good. And so Kurt Russell Santa Claus has to figure out a way to prove that the imposter is just that, an imposter. And then there's some big reveal as to who the imposter really is. I don't think I've gotten there yet.
I like it. I like it. I think we've done it. Netflix, we're both freelance writers, by the way.
Yeah, I've written a screenplay.
Matt, you have screenplay experience. I have written a short teleplay. So hit us up, Netflix.
MovieFightersCast@gmail.com.
Yeah, please.
We will be back in 2019 with new movie fighting for you, the listeners. We hope you have enjoyed this Christmas spectacular blowout about the Christmas Chronicles. We hope you liked it as much as we did.
Yeah.
We had a handful of nitpicks, but I ultimately really like this movie.
Yeah. Again, I like it with an asterisk. I think it's a weird movie, but it's a very enjoyable one. And I don't think its weirdness makes it not enjoyable, like a lot of movies are.
Will we like the movie we watch in January? Almost certainly not.
Yeah, definitely not.
But you should come back for it. If you want to help us out, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as $1 a month for this show and all the other shows that we do. Our music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. The snack situation theme is by Matt Fisher. As I mentioned, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do that at moviefighterscast@gmail.com, which is our email address. See you all in January. Thanks for listening. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We love you.
We love you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
This is has been a Kaleidos Media production.